This week's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Comixology. Are you tired of being stuck inside the house with nothing to read? Check out infamouspodcast.com/Comixology for your free 30-day trial to Comixology Unlimited. That's infamouspodcast.com/Comixology. Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is episode 232, Discoherence for Days. This is Brian.
I'm Daryl.
You were a little slow there. Are you having discoherence?
You have to lead in a little bit. Yeah, it's like, I'm Brian and...
No, I don't do that. And...
Kind of like, here's Johnny.
That was a bad name to pick right there, you know, a little ironic. Anyway, hey, real quick, before we get started, I was just telling Daryl about this. I updated our Patreon page. We have a bunch of new tiers, cheaper prices, some really cool prizes, rewards that go along with those tiers. And to start out, we actually got a new patron. So at the Infamite level, we want to give a shout out to Julian Brown. Hey, buddy, thanks for donating. Your stickers are on the way. And yeah, thanks for supporting the show. Anyway, Daryl, what's happening, buddy?
Just another Thursday, rainy Thursday in the tri-state.
Are you sure it's Thursday?
Friday Junior.
Friday
Junior. Yeah, well, yeah, like you were talking about Thursday, and I had a brain cramp of thinking, oh, it's Thursday. But, you know, when you work from home, and I've done this for a few years now, mm-hmm. Shit just runs together.
Yeah, I mean,
days just run together.
Like you and I both have been, like, remote workers for a long time, and it's like, I never know what day it is, so...
Yeah, I actually saw a Baby Yoda meme the other day where it was like, is today Friday? And it was like, it doesn't matter. What day is today? And it's like, it doesn't matter.
I will say it was really funny today. I probably got like 10 emails of stuff I've ordered over the past like 4 weeks or so. And like everything shipped today. And it's like, okay. Like I kind of like, it's like, oh, I forgot I ordered that, you know, sort of a thing. So, yeah, it was a really weird Thursday. Anywho. All right. So today we have some news bites to get into, talking about our favorite subject, movies, and what's happening with the American box office and when are things going to come out and whatnot. And then we're going to talk about episode 6 of season 3 of Westworld, Decoherence, which was a pretty great episode. But yeah, so first let's hop into the movie news. So according to Deadline, the Batman is moving to October of 2021. How do you feel about that?
That's something that when was it? Was it June?
Yeah, it was supposed to be June of
2021.
Yeah. So I mean, it's pushed back a bit, like not a ton, but enough to be, you know, weird. But I also think that date makes more sense.
I agree. I 100% agree on
you
that.
Put it in that October. Like I would even like push it all the way back to November and put it in that old Harry Potter Thor. Pre-Thanksgiving weekend. Yeah, it was supposed to be June 25th. But you know, the whole October thing, okay. It makes sense. It gives Matt Reeves a little more time. You know, we have another a little more than a year and a half. But yeah, and I guess they're going to relocate to London. Or they're finishing in London instead of relocating. So, and it says here a quarter of the film has already been shot. So we'll see what's happening, but, that's not the only, change that's happening. So Baz Luhrmann's Elvis Presley movie starring Tom Hanks had an October 1st, date, and it's moving to November of 2021. I think it was an October 1st of this year. But it's going to go up against Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness.
Ew, that's, yeah, that's that. That'll be an interesting one. The other things, I don't know. I know. So what? So I'm trying to think of off the top of my head. I know Marvel did a lot of switching around of their movies. Black Widow's the one, you know, November. Mm-hmm. And they did push back several of their other movies. I think they took one off the, or was that Sony that had an untitled movie for October of?
Yeah, Sony took one off, I believe. And then, but yeah, like there's a Will Smith movie that was supposed to come out this October, and it's coming out next year, 2021. Lisa Joy from Westworld, her Hugh Jackman, Tandy Newton, Rebecca Ferguson sci-fi movie, Reminiscence, is now going to be April 2021. And Lin-Manuel Miranda's musical, animated musical, Vivo, has been moved as well, and it'll end up going up against Reminiscence. So yeah, I don't know, it's just really interesting to see all this stuff getting moved around. And you know, my question is like, for something like Black Widow, you know, why push it all the way back to November? You know, why not you know, push for that August September timeframe, because you can always move it again. You know,
right? And I know what that Wonder Woman is. I believe Wonder Woman is the first week or second week of August.
Yeah,
but like you said, doing it in that September time frame, and again, if you want to push it back, push it back. I think it's easier to push something back than move it up a couple months.
The other thing, DC, the Flash movie will go a month earlier in 2022. Going out in June instead of July. And then Shazam, which was supposed to be April 2022, will now go November 4th, 2022. And that's only 6 weeks out from Aquaman 2 in December of 2022.
And then you saw how Venom, you know, that's the other thing. Venom got pushed back. Venom 2, I should say. Let There Be Carnage got pushed back to June of next year.
Okay. So,
which, if everything falls in line, that's only a month before Spider-Man 3.
Right. Yeah. So it's I don't know. Like, I get it. So, but I'm curious if they're going to start pushing some of these other movies back. But then you run into the, okay, Tom Holland, for example, it's only going to be like this cute little kid for so long before he kind of starts growing out of whatever stage they have Peter Parker at the moment. And, you know, all of a sudden it's like, okay, he's like looking like a teenager, and then, you know, he looks like a grizzled dude with a beard. So
I don't think he's ever going to have a beard.
I get it.
I'm glad you brought that up, because what'd you say?
You get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you brought that up, because on Tom Holland, I just saw a bit interview with him on Kimmel. I think it was Kimmel. And he was talking about, with everything that happened, they were only in day one of shooting the Uncharted movie, and that's getting pushed back. And he was supposed to start filming Spider-Man, I think, later in the summer.
Yeah.
So, again, based on box office, Uncharted is probably going to get the shaft, because Uncharted, another comic book, another video game movie that may or may not suck. Mm-hmm. Versus,
wait, is he Nathan Drake?
I think he's a younger Nathan Drake, okay. And Mark Wahlberg is going to be Sully. I believe. I haven't kept up with it much.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, that movie has been a start stop for years. I mean, if you remember, like, Nathan Fillion was attached to it at one point.
And, who would have been perfect?
Yeah, 10 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I mean.
He's like 75 years old now. There's no way he can play that part.
Well, dude, he's playing a rookie cop. Come on now. I love that show.
Yeah, but he's
way,
like rookie. A 75-year-old rookie cop. So. All right. So in other kind of DC Marvel news, James Gunn actually is saying that Guardians 3 and Suicide Squad 2 releases won't be delayed at all, because he's so far ahead of schedule.
So when are those? What are the release dates for those?
Let's see. So Suicide Squad 2 is August of next year.
Okay.
And Guardians Volume 3. I'm not seeing the date in the article. But yeah, but I mean, like, before Guardians 3 comes out, you've got to do the Shang-Chi movie, Doctor Strange, Thor Love and Thunder, and the Eternals.
I mean, do you really need to do Shang-Chi?
Why not? I mean, it's, I don't know. Shang-Chi's a really interesting character. And there's a thing in Spider-Man with Spider-Island where Peter lost his Peter Tingle. And Shang-Chi taught him Kung Fu so he could, like, react to things and not, because he always relied on his Spidey sense. And it was really, really cool. And it was kind of like that whole Neo moment in The Matrix where he's like, "Ha, I know Kung Fu." But I saw
a panel from that a while back. I think part of my hesitation on the whole Shang-Chi thing is, and I don't even remember who they have playing him. I think it's more about the whiplash I got from season one of Iron Fist,
yeah,
which was so incredibly bad that.
So, I'm going to defend Iron Fist for a second. The bad thing about Iron Fist is that Finn Jones did not take the martial arts seriously, and he was hurt and refused to let them, like, really use a stunt double. And then on the same instance is when he came in hurt, they should have said, "All right, you're out. Like, where we need someone who can have the physicality for this role. You're not good enough of an actor to pull this off."
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I'm like, season two was vastly better. It still wasn't great, but I actually enjoyed season two. Season one was just terrible. From not just from his perspective, just the storytelling perspective. Yeah. I didn't like the direction it went. So it wasn't just him.
But you also have to remember the showrunner from season one was the Abomination, who was the showrunner of the Inhumans.
Of what?
The Inhumans.
Of the Inhumans?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes
a
whole lot of
sense. I mean,
that
tells you everything you need to know.
I watched three episodes of The Inhumans, and that's three episodes too many.
Okay, so I watched all eight because I'm a masochist or sadist.
I'm sorry.
Masochist. No, I'm a masochist. And I really love The Inhumans. I think they're awesome. They're an awesome, like, group and everything. But, man, if they did not waste Anson Mount on Black Bolt for where he should have been someone else in the Marvel Universe, Professor X, you know, it's just wow! What a catalog of missed opportunity there.
Oh man. Okay. So anyway, let's please get to something else. Yeah. I'm just like having flashbacks of, you know, Ramses taking clippers to
Medusa's
head.
Yeah, like, which was stupid. Oh, and that hair was awful. Anyway, all right. On good news, Westworld was announced this week, renewed for a fourth season. Which we were talking last week about how kind of the numbers of the show have been not as high as past seasons. They've gone down a little bit but I mean, I've been loving this season. I think season three has been amazing. You know, I have some friends who are hating on this season, but you know, they're allowed to have that opinion and you know, it's maybe not for everybody because it is a different show.
And one thing I will say, like going to different message boards over, you know, the random weeks and stuff with articles about Westworld, I see quite a few comments talking about, "Hey, I gave up after season two. Season two was just like chaos for me. And I'm not going to even entertain season three or check out season three later."
To quote Littlefinger, chaos is a ladder. And season two was the ladder to bring us to this amazing ass season three.
Yeah. But like, I'm just saying that a lot of, based on the numbers, I think a lot of people checked out after season two.
Right.
It's like, okay, this is too convoluted for me.
Right. No, I get
it. Yeah. Season three so far has been, I've been loving after first two episodes, as you know, I thought were okay, but ever since week three, man, it's just,
yeah,
hit after hit.
You
after
didn't
hit.
Hop in with both feet like I did.
No.
I was all ready to go. I was all in all the time. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm excited to see what happens in season or in episode 7 coming up. But before we get to episode 7, why don't we talk about episode 6, Decoherence? Unless you have something else you want to talk about.
Oh, no. Let's dive right in.
Okay, so the tagline for this one is, "Do a lot of people tell you that you need therapy?" So you want to break this up into a couple of arcs, right? Who do we want to talk about first?
Well, let's actually, that's a tough one. I would say Nave actually had the least amount of screen time.
Okay. I was going to say, let's start with Maeve.
Yeah.
Okay. So Maeve's story this week is really interesting. We revisit Warworld, and she has a little more control over the simulation than she did last time. And she works out some aggression there.
Yeah, I was kind of waiting for her to say, "I know Kung Fu."
Well, she didn't have to tell us. She showed us, like a good storyteller does, that she knows Kung Fu. Remember, show, don't tell. But yeah, so I love the idea of her getting killed in Tokyo, or Singapore, wherever they were. And, you know, she died. That body died. And I was listening to another show and they were wondering, like, how do hosts die? And she says, well, when you get stabbed in the heart. And like any machine, like when you lose that like hydraulic that is pumping whatever it needs to pump through your system to get it to work, whether it be blood or gas or air, like, yeah, that body bled out and like no longer was able to function. So, one of the things that they've always shown is as long as the control unit survives, the body survives, or the host can survive because they can rebuild the body. So yeah, I mean, like, so the Dolorai version of how do you say it?
Oh,
I ruined it for you.
Musashi.
Thank you. Musashi didn't like cut the head off and you know destroy the brain. He just stabbed her. They stabbed her in the heart. But no, Maeve's story, like, I freaking love the Maeve Lee Sizemore story.
I love, yeah, that's one of the things I had, you know, I at first I wasn't sure how I was gonna like, I mean, I did like him in last season, or yeah, season two, and he's kind of like that perfect, I don't know what you would want to call it, like, just addition to her story, kind of, you know, he's almost a stand-in in a way for the audience, you know, just kind of going along because he's figuring stuff out too, like, when in this episode this week when he said, oh yeah, when I finally figured out that I was dead or what have you.
Yeah.
One of the things actually, and this is a perfect, even though she had the least amount of screen time, it's funny because she had one of the most powerful lines in the season thus far is in the show's opening. Mm-hmm. She's seeing, you know, she's in the field where everyone disappeared, you know, where her daughter and Teddy and the others went, you know, disappeared to. And she said, this isn't real.
Right.
And that's kind of one of those things that really plays into the Westworld, just the whole theme of Westworld. What's real? What's not? What are you in control of?
Right.
And this episode in particular, especially when we talk about Williams, fascinating arc in this episode.
Right. Yeah. So one of the things I really liked about Sizemore this week is he took her to a bar, and he had programmed the bar so nobody could see him. And then she's like, oh, so just like in real life. So, but I do think the interesting thing is like Serac and Insight got Sizemore completely wrong at the same time, because they programmed him to be devoted to her lovingly. Right. And right. It's definitely like the program has morphed a little bit to be a little more platonic, but she doesn't love him. He doesn't love her now, but it's really interesting to see the role that he's fallen into as like a pseudo Jiminy Cricket, right? He's the,
yes,
the conscience on her shoulder. And I'm wondering now, is he like a glitch in the Matrix where they don't necessarily realize that he's a program who's going rogue?
Yeah, I didn't even think about it that way. Like, kind of like flying under the radar.
Well, yeah. And you know, jumping kind of towards the end of the episode, you know, she's building her army to go against the Dolorai. And, you know, we lost Hector because we saw
R.I.P. Hector.
Yeah, pour one out. We saw his brain ball get just crushed, and it was all gooey. That was surprising.
Yeah.
So like there's a big like thing on the web thinking like she's going to put Sizemore in Hector's body that was being built.
And that's what I was wondering, because I'm thinking, so she has, there are three hosts, right? Including her. Well, yeah. Not including her, but
there'll
in
be
addition
four
to her.
Total. Yeah. With
yeah. So there's four. So it was Hector was one. That would make sense to put Sizemore in there. Mm-hmm. Now, the other two, one thing I don't recall, and this is why I wish I would watch season two again. Did Clementine escape into that other world, or is she?
No, she was damaged. Remember, she had the pseudo lobotomy, and she was turned into the Trojan horse.
Okay.
But so we'll get to Clem in a second. So the thing with that they're saying is they're going to put Sizemore into Hector's body, and then they're saying like, well, Sizemore wrote Hector's story, so, and he wrote it like to be the idealized version of himself, right?
Right.
But this isn't Sizemore. So yeah. It's not going to be like, oh, I get the chance to live out this fantasy that I had. It's going to be a, what do I do? It's going to be a very fish out of water thing. And it's going to be really interesting to watch the guy that was Hector from Lost in 300 try to play like he's trying to be Hector. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess if you look, I don't know, how much do you watch and like pause and like look at the screens and stuff like that?
Oh, I try to pause it like for last week, for instance, or was the week before when everybody got their ratings.
Yeah.
I was trying to read everything. Yeah. Everybody's ratings.
So with the one host that was being built still, it was Clementine's serial number from season one. When one of the times they were working on her, it was like CP and then the 9-digit number. And, you know, okay. Clementine Pennyfeather is her name. So that's why, like, a lot of people are thinking it's Clementine. I'd love to see Artemis, the lady with the snake tattoo, come back. Because she was such
badass. I loved her, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Like, I could see, like, yes. The three of them going up against the Dolori and then, like, Sizemore, Hector, you know, whatever, Hectmore. you know, whatever you want to call him. Like kind of like fumbling around in the background for comedic effect.
Yeah, I loved her, Artemis. Thought she was great.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And remember in Shogun World there was the Asian version of her with the dragon tattoo, yes, instead of the snake, and you know they were all getting along. The two of them were getting along, and it was pretty cool. But no, I do think like so Maeve had. So Maeve was put into the holding program that was Warworld because Serac and the people from Insight recovered Connell's memory ball.
Right.
Which is corrupted. And so they were having her interrogate a version of Dolores. And we were having fun with the idea of Evan Rachel Wood sitting naked on that metal chair. And I was like, I imagine it's cold. And you're like, no, they definitely have somebody sitting on there. And I think that's worse, right? When you sit down to a warm seat on your naked butt, it's just creepy and gross. But, you know, the hair extensions were in full effect because of Evan Rachel Wood's new no nudity clause in her contract, which, fair enough. You know, I don't think her sitting there naked added anything to the story. I don't think her sitting there with super long hair extensions took anything away from the story. But it was really great when Maeve is kind of questioning her on her motivations and, you know, the Connell's Dolores says, you know, I'm not the one who can control all of us.
Well, no, she said, she was like coming from the person who can control.
Right. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny. They're basically the entire conversation just solidified that in their own way, they're the same person, you know, not the same person in the sense of.
They're the same as far as, you know, they're the same as far as their base code is Dolores, right? But they've had the different interactions with the world now that has fundamentally changed their yes. core. And so, you know, I mean, Connell's was always there to be a suicide bomber. Like, I think that was the whole reason she created him. And yeah, so, but it was really cool watching them, interrogate her, and then, you know, Maeve is able to kind of see into the real, and watching Charlotte Hale, the Hale Loris, as Lisa Joy called her in the after credits stuff, work her way through. So as she's working her way through, you know, the memory ball or the memory cores that are attached to the new host being built. And you were going to say something.
Yeah. So what I was going back to right before they started interrogating her, or the, you know, the Connells, Dolores, mm-hmm. Maeve says she can't hurt us, which I thought was just kind of interesting because mm-hmm. she was like, in here, I'm in control in here.
Right.
And Maeve gets hurt as much as she, like, other than her daughter being taken from her, sitting there, standing there powerless as she watches Hector get crushed out of existence. I thought that was just like, just that play on, or not the play on words, just that her phrasing of she can't hurt us.
Right.
And yet, you know, her Hale Loris.
I would argue that this hurt more than her daughter, because her daughter was a cornerstone memory that was given to her. It wasn't something earned.
Yeah.
And her feelings for Hector came about organically and, you know, were true and deep. And remember, she went back for him when she didn't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
yes,
so I feel like this is the worst thing. And, like, you know, her reaction really shows that. And then just kind of to fast forward, you end with Maeve, you know, having been rebuilt, which was so cool to watch, like, them putting the eyebrows in and, you know, cutting the hole in the head for the memory ball and, you know, kind of watching the skin go from that milky white to, like, the right color pigment for Tandy Newton. And then she's standing there and, like, she has a very smug, knowing look about her.
And it's interesting. That's a nice, could be a nice segue into the other powerful arc in this episode, which is going to be one of her adversaries, mm-hmm. is Hale.
Yeah. Before we start talking too much about Hale, I just want to give a shout out to Tessa Thompson's arms in this episode. I mean, girl is jacked and looking good in that, like, pantsuit, sheer silver, like, top, gold top thing that she had on.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I've been a Tessa Thompson fan since Veronica Mars, but wow.
Yeah. I wasn't a fan of the jacket she had on with that. I thought that was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. But when she, like, when she took it off and she was like, yeah.
But, like,
check out these guns, son.
When she's going John Wick on the Insight Security.
Yes.
But, yeah. So, no. So, it's, you know, I think Evan Rachel Wood is an amazing actress. So, when I say my next sentence, it's not downplaying her or Hed Harris or Aaron Paul or anybody else on this show. Tessa Thompson is the best actor on this show because she goes from badass to doubting mouse to mother hen or mother lion back to badass, like, so effortlessly. And at no point do you not believe any of the different personas that she's playing.
Yeah. I think it's, again, I think you could argue overall, mm-hmm. but I would say I don't think it's actually a question based on season six who's been given the heaviest load as far as the acting performance, and it's her.
Oh,
it's absolutely her.
I think she has, like, and we'll get to William, but I feel like the Hale Loris character has been giving a really compelling story about how much of the story that you're given, that and the part you have to play, how much of that becomes you versus mm-hmm. how much of yourself do you bring into it? And, you know, I mean, we never saw Dolores interact with kids. And then here we have Hale Loris killing a pedophile in the park and stealing his dog. you know, and then that was the thing that ended up giving her away, is she checked in on her family and, you know, Sorak was doing the mole hunt throughout Delos after he bought it, and you know, that's ultimately what gave her away. But
which really says something, that her in this form is more human than the original Hale ever was.
Right. And I mean, the original Hale was the mole for Insight. So like, yeah, to be the other side of that double agent, where now she's the mole for Dolores, or the Dolori, you know, it was really, really quite cool. And I think, you know, when she was walking in the park with the one board member, what has that guy been in? He was in something where he was a bad guy and he was awesome. I remember him, the board member that got shot in the head. But like, when he gets killed, it's like she expected it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, her reaction. Well, I think she knew she had to, because she could have defended herself if necessary. So it was one of those things where she was surprised, but expecting some type of, or knew who they were, mm-hmm, at least.
Yeah. So I mean, I think it was just one of those things where it was. Yeah, I don't know. It was just. Like, I think she was trying to keep her cover going and everything, and yeah, so I don't know. It was really cool.
And the conversation she has with Dolores Prime in the car, where, and again, you were talking about how Connells was, mm-hmm, the suicide bomber. And, you know, she tells Dolores, she's like, I can't do this anymore. Right. I don't need help. And then she was like, you know, you can do that. And Hale Laura says, oh, like, Connells, did you tell him that too? You know, did he know he was going to die?
Yeah.
And then at the end, even after Dolores gives her the pep talk, she tells her, she's like, I can feel myself slipping away from you, mm-hmm, from us.
Right.
And it's all about that, you know, that development of, like you said, being around the kid, being around, you know, husband, and just that, the change that certain things, certain events in your life give you. And it's also kind of interesting where, and it kind of leads to what, you know, Michael Ealy's character says, mm-hmm, when she comes home and, you know, she asks if he read his profile, and he's like, no, I didn't, even though I wanted to know what happened between us. And he tells her, he's like, it's our choice, Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of sums up a lot of what Hale Loris's arc has been. It, like, she's making these choices based on, you know, previously, I guess you would say, unexperienced situations. Mm-hmm. And she's found like that deeper part of her. Because she also said, I wish we could have burned these emotions out of us.
Right. Yeah, right. And Dolores is kind of like, no, we need them. They're what set us apart. The board member, it was Russell Wong. You may remember him from Romeo Must Die and New Jack City.
New Jack City, yeah.
but yeah, he had the awesome fight with Jet Li in Romeo Must Die, because they were buddies from China.
Oh, with, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway. Yeah, and watching him and watching him get killed. And do you remember that show Black Sash that was on, I don't remember, it was UPN or it was the WB, with the karate school.
I do not remember that.
It was really dumb, so you're not missing anything. But yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. But no, you're right. Like, the whole emotions thing, not having them would have definitely made their jobs easier, but because they're not the bad guys, they kind of need those emotions.
Yeah, because I think Dolores says, you know, if we did that only to survive, would we, you know, basically something along the lines of, would we really be worthy, or, you know, would it be even be worth it?
Right, because you want to thrive. It's not just about surviving. It's about starting. Right. It's starting and protecting your species.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think, if we learned anything about Ciroc last week, is he's not really, he likes to say he cares about the human race and humanity, but I don't really think he does.
I think he actually does. I think we said this last week, he's gotten his initial aim, his initial cause, it's been muddled with the power he's gotten.
Yeah.
So like, I think for 100%, like his initial goal was to preserve humanity. And as the years have gone on, he's gotten a little bit, you know, he's gotten a little bit too much power. I mean, he has almost unlimited power. Like, if you want to be honest,
unlimited power. Anyway, no, you're right. I think you're right there. Yeah. So when Charlotte is trying to save the Delos deal to send it private, and she realizes it's not going to happen, she saves the host building data on direction. So I'm curious as to how does Dolores not already have that? Because she obviously had to build a bunch of bodies in the real world. And we saw in Bernard's old house, the machine without any of the white milky host making substance.
Right.
But is she going to start building other people and bringing in more than just herself?
Yeah. I would have to believe that's what she wants to do, because if not, I mean, I know there is that, you know, the other world, but mm-hmm. I don't think that's her goal to, you know, send all the hosts to, you know, that other plane. And I don't know.
No,
if there
I mean,
was
she said, track. She said like, this is their world now. Like the real world is the host world now.
Yeah.
But yeah. And so, you know, there's that. And then, you know, Charlotte gets found out stealing the data. She kills the guy, which was pretty cool. And then she goes like a baller and just sits in the boardroom. And then, you know, Serac's like, you know, calls her out for being the mole.
Okay, a bit of contention, point of contention here, and this is a little bit of a what I would call just a pet peeve. You're checking her purse and you bring something out that looks like a bomb and you just set it on the table. Are you serious?
I thought it looked like one of those really fancy, like Yeti, like a futuristic Yeti coffee cup that kept her coffee cold or warm.
Now he should be fired and never be a security guard anywhere.
Oh yeah,
else
no,
ever
no.
Again.
The security in this show, just in general, is laughable.
I thought. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, because I got that message again. But it's funny. When you were talking about the guy that saw her transferring the data, mm-hmm. he sounded like a junior high schooler. I am going to tell Serac what you're doing.
Right.
Like, really?
Okay. Are you?
Okay. But that just sounded so petulant. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to tell the boss.
Right. I'm telling mommy. He was like Candace from Phineas and Ferb.
But let's talk about Ed 209 on steroids,
dude. That, like let hold on. Let's not even like call this thing Ed 209 on steroids. I mean, this was a freaking bulldozer with legs that was freaking badass. Because Ed 209 sucked. Like his biggest weakness was stairs.
Yeah, actually it was.
You know, like this thing wouldn't stop at stairs. It would be like, yeah, no, I got this. I'm just gonna bring the whole building down. You know. Yeah, that thing was awesome. Just like tearing through and when she brought it out and, you know, it kind of put itself together through the shipping container was really neat.
And again, I know we didn't talk about it, but again, just the visual, the cinematography, the music, just all the technical stuff this season has just been, they've been knocking it out of the park. When you talked about how they showed Maeve getting built, mm-hmm. like all, you know, the eyebrows and all that stuff, that's just another part of it.
Yeah. Well, I think Hale Loris's elevator and hallway fight are on par with the Winter Soldier and Daredevil. You know,
where it was just the movements were so crisp. She actually, whoever that stunt double was, because there was a part where you could tell the stunt double. It kind of, she moved, and I don't think it is, but it moved like I forgot her first name, but it's Moneymaker, which is Scarlett Johansson's stunt double. She moved like that.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think it's her, obviously, for obvious reasons.
I think Tessa did some of that because you see
her. Well, she definitely did. Yeah.
But like when she came out of the jacket, that was Tessa Thompson, and she crushed it. But like the violence that came out of Charlotte up against that host against the guy in the elevator, like, you know, it was kind of, you know, I hated the scene in Blade Runner 2049 when Batista was fighting Ryan Gosling, because like in no world does Ryan Gosling, someone who looks like Ryan Gosling, ever beat up someone who looks like Dave Batista. But like here I bought it, you know, I mean, it was like watching like Alias or something like that with Jennifer Garner or watching, like you said, Black Widow taking someone down. It was just the visceral nature of it and the way how quickly she flipped that switch. I think it was really beautifully shot and choreographed. And then I questioned why she had to shoot him in the head, why she didn't just snap his neck. But like, still, I mean, that's where we got into the whole John Wick montage.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, yeah, the choreography in this episode was pretty tight. There weren't too many examples where I was like, that could have been a little bit better or what have you. I just thought that was, and again, props to Tessa Thompson for that, as well as the stunt team in general, like not just like for her character, but yeah, the stunt team in general did a great job.
But then, like, I mean, you being a practitioner of, you know, jujitsu, like I can understand where you'd be a little more critical of any of that stuff. But then she gets away, or she gets captured, and you know, she gets away, and she goes back home. And I question the logic, and I think it's because this version of Dolores is just months old. And hasn't had the time to build up like the algorithm about, you know, how to act in the real world, thinking that, you know, I can just go home. And she goes back to her ex, Jake, and her son, Nathan. And they decide they're going to run off and.
And. You said, yeah, like, were you, I was expecting that.
No,
honestly.
I wasn't. I did not think they were going to kill a kid.
We're
so trained now, like, by these things to be safe, that when we see something like this, like the stakes that were involved with killing Nathan, was really, really like, and this is going to sound sick saying this about a kid. It was really refreshing to see, like, there were no sacred cows and no plot armor protecting that family.
Yeah. One of the times I actually, and this is not a great movie, but the second Alien versus Predator movie where the father and son, they were hunting and then they both get, you know, egged in the face.
Yeah.
And the aliens burst from the kid too. And I was actually surprised. I remember seeing that movie and I'm like, wow, it was, they actually
like,
went there.
You know, it was like Brightburn, right? When he shot Roy from The Office through the head with the laser beams, laser eyes, laser vision. You didn't expect that, right? And you certainly didn't expect him to like shoot through the back of his head.
Right.
You know, that was just something that kind of added to the horror of the, you know, the movie. But with this, I mean, you get that. And then you have her, you know,
I can protect you.
Well, and so you have her, yeah, saying she can protect him and she can't. But then you have her crawling out of the wreckage. And I don't know if you've seen like the picture for this season, but it's like a burnt up host, like in a desert area. And so it's very reminiscent of that image, what we got. But then we also have a Dolores who is fundamentally changed, who developed feelings for Jake and Nathan. And now we're going to see what she does to Ciroc coming out of this. Or is she going to hold Dolores accountable?
And think about this. So she has that. And now Maeve has more of a, because she knows which version of Dolores, even though Dolores Prime is running all of this.
Right.
You know, Hail Dolores is the one that actually killed Hector.
Right. So, yeah, is she gonna have beef? I did see another like theory that like Hail Loris was gonna team up with Maeve, and I'm like, yeah, that's too hokey. That's like Fast and Furious 8 with Jason Statham coming to work with the crew, with the family, Mi Familia, and you know, after killing Han and everyone being okay with it. So yeah, no, I don't see that happening. Maeve is very much an eye for an eye kind of gal.
Oh, absolutely.
So God, I love Tandy Newton. She's just so good. Like, I love the fact that they have put this show firmly on the shoulders of Evan Rachel Wood, Tessa Thompson, and Tandy Newton,
and this is the important thing. This is the most important. It's not that for me. It's that it's organically done.
Yeah.
It's nothing. Oh, yeah. And as long as something is done, I don't care what you do in a movie or a TV show, as long as it makes sense and it's not to check off a box.
So I'm going to,
as long as it makes sense from a narrative perspective, do whatever the hell you want to do.
Yeah. So I was thinking about something earlier today when it came to these three is because Dolores is Superman, right? She's kind of boring. She's all powerful. She can't be stopped. But she's still awesome, and I love her story. And then Tandy Newton is Batman. You know, like Maeve is you know, working in the shadows and doing what she needs to do. And then like I don't even know who Char Loris is. Like she's like Green Arrow, who's kind of doing everything kind of right, but then messing up. And then she made a mistake where now she's gonna have to like go like Longbow Hunter on everybody. So you know, it's like I don't know. It's just kind of I was just like, you know, just everything goes back to comics, right? But yeah, so I don't know. This story was so good. And then to segue to the next person we want to talk about. She did call Dolores. Hail Loris did call Dolores and be like, hey, we found him because the tracking serum, I guess, that they stuck in William right before she had him carted off to the loony bin. And so yeah, I was listening to another podcast talking about this, and so they're like, well, wait, they had to wait for them to scan his blood. No, that's not how those kind of things work. They knew where he was all along because they gave that information to Stubbs and Bernard. Right.
Right.
Like Connells gave them like, hey, this is where they are. It was just a matter of like, hey, we know he's here. They scanned him. It's time to get him out. But William, the William story this week was such a great thing. And I'm so happy that they kind of closed out on that.
Right.
But the five Williams and James Delos running a group therapy session has got to be one of my favorite things HBO's done in 5 or 6 years. And that counts all the cool Game of Thrones stuff.
And you know, the funny thing, and this is when you say, hey, this is uniform throughout. Every version of William is trying to blame something else for what he did.
Mm. Yeah, except the Jimmy Simpson version when he's like, I'm the best of you guys. He doesn't understand.
Oh, no, he even did too.
But he doesn't understand how they messed up his life. You know, he's not necessarily
blaming. Well, no, he even did, like, because he even mentioned something where he's like, well, if this didn't happen, well, maybe this is why I'm this way.
Yeah.
It's not until.
Oh, that's right, with the kid, because he's like, oh, yeah, maybe this is why I'm the way I am. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I forgot about that. It was this. I mean, this whole thing was so good. And you know, with the interesting thing with William is we never got the bars to know when he was or wasn't in a simulation, right? It didn't go into the condensed 16x9 black bars on top and bottom. Even when they stuck the retainer in his mouth, and ow, like, can I just say ow? Like, I don't want that put in my mouth. Like I cringed at that. Like I got goosebumps. Like when they did that, I was like, oh my God, that's the worst thing I can think of happening to me. The little drills going up into the soft, but how long do you think he was there?
I don't know, because you hear them say a while, because, and I'll say this, when I first saw this, I was a little, again, perturbed with, okay, all this shit's going on with everybody finding out stuff, and they're still doing this with him. But then, you know, they play it out at the end where everybody left him. Yeah. Like, he was left there.
He was just left.
And they're like, he's been here for – and they mentioned – and I think it's Stubbs that says he looks like he's been here for a while.
Yeah, it looks like he's been here for a while. I feel like we definitively know now that William is not a host. He is a person.
Yes.
He's a real life boy. Not to say that he won't become a host at some point, because if you remember at the end of last season when William had his thing with Dolores in the rubble or the ruins of the hub, right? That was they said that was in the far future. So I feel like that is where he's going to go. And as they get him out of here and they end up back on the island, like, he will end up a host before the end of the season.
Yeah. And one of the things I just got from this, and, you know, we've talked about this a lot this season about choice, destiny, control, or choice and control. And, you know, one of the things I think it's the Delos who, as the mediator, he was great. Peter Mullen was so good in that role. It's not all about you, you know.
Like when he's the kid version, he's like, what did I do? I never did anything wrong. And they're like, oh, really? And then they get that memory of where he broke a kid's face and knocked teeth out.
Because when they first show that, you think his father was going to beat him.
Right.
You know, just because. I like that little swerve. It gives a little, it shows that he was actually, a little psycho early on.
Yeah, he's not getting beat because his dad has a problem. He's getting beat because he's a little shithead.
Yeah. But, and again, this goes back to everything that we've been talking about for this season and the first two seasons about destiny or choice, and what William says. And I mentioned this about, and we talked about this regarding, you know, Rehoboam and, you know, if you have control of your life or not. And he says, you know, choice versus choice or destiny. If you can't tell, does it matter?
Right. Right. I mean, and that's been one of the central themes of the show all along. Like when Jimmy Simpson, William asks, is it real? And like when he asks, are you real? And when he's, you know, first going to the park for the first time, and she says, if you can't tell, does it matter? The concierge host who lets him pick, you know, white or black. And he chose white at first. And it's really interesting that it comes back around. So we had the family man, the face of Delos William. We had young William. We had Jimmy Simpson, all ambition William, and then we had the man in black. Like literally the pinnacle of the man in black. And, you know, then we have William sitting here, the current William, in all white. It was very, very interesting to see the shades of gray that led to him being the man in black.
Right.
And then what it took for him to, you know, have his Vader moment and come into the light, or his Ben Solo moment, I think is probably a little more accurate, because he's going to run off and save the day. Because he says, I'm the good guy.
Right.
And it's like, no, you're never the good guy, buddy.
You're not
like,
the good guy.
You keep saying that, but I don't think you know what it means. You know, sort of a thing.
But it's also that, you know, and I'm not necessarily calling him the villain, but all the good characters, good, bad, or like you said, in the shades of gray, they're the heroes of their own story. And there's no better example of that than William, as we get him after he takes out.
Yeah.
Well,
when he beats himself up, and I loved him beating Jimmy Simpson with the chair. I thought that was awesome. I don't know. I still think Bernard is going to turn out to be the bad guy. I think the way he so freely changes Stubbs, and the way he so freely has been trying to like identify other hosts and turn them down, turn them to his side against their will. Because remember, Stubbs finished his core program. He was just ready to end it. That was his destiny. That was what he was supposed to do. that was his choice to follow through on, and Bernard took that away from him. And then Bernard never took the time to fix him. And I guess part of that is like Luke Hemsworth actually has a hurt shoulder when they were shooting this, and they just kind of wrote it in. I read that somewhere. I don't know. That's just internet, like half-assed, you know, bullshit.
Half-assed internet research.
What, is that what, that's what they called it on? Isn't that what they called it on the Rewatchables?
Rewatchables. Yeah. Yeah.
But we'll just call that conjecture. How about that? But yeah, the whole thing, but man, I forgot how much I missed the James Delos character being that.
Oh man, he is great.
Being the anti-Jiminy Cricket in William's head.
Yeah. he's the Sith version of the Jiminy Cricket.
He's Jiminy Cicada.
But like to your point about, and I know you've been, you know, tooting this about Bernard for a while, and it makes some sense. It would also, you know, it would also basically show you that once again, the hero of your own story, even if you're the villain.
Yeah.
Because everything Bernard's doing, he's doing because he thinks it's the right thing to do to stop Dolores. Mm-hmm. And how funny would that be, to your point, if he ends up being the one?
Yeah.
That becomes a bad guy.
He's the actual divergence in the Rehoboam. How do you say it?
Rehoboam. Rehoboam. Oh, there we go.
Rehoboam. Rehoboam. Rolos. Anyway, I do want to talk about his therapist real quick. Where I don't know if she was real, or if she was a simulation, but her profile was just devastating. Like, husband leaves, she loses her kid, she has multiple affairs with patients and coworkers, and then they're taking William to the chair where they throw him in the AI or the augmented reality, and she just walks off her desk and, like, you know.
And that's where I wasn't 100% sure if that was real or not, because I know he was still tripping balls off or whatever they gave him.
Right. Well, and so like that's my question. Is that real? It's like when Hale was walking back to the apartment, did you see someone? It looked like someone jumped behind her.
Yes.
Like, and I don't know if it was just like closed. Like, I paused and rewound it. Paused and rewound it. And like I feel like if it would have been a person, you would have heard some screams. Even though, like, you know, the chaos that's happening.
Right.
Yeah, it was, I don't know. But like this whole idea of like getting like the insight on, no pun intended there, the future that has been prescribed to you, that, you know, it's the machinations of a machine to steer you in a certain direction. You know, like the way Ash dealt with it, Lena Waithe's character last episode, seeing about her brother was going to, his mm-hmm. life was going to end violently, as was hers. I really wish we could have seen what Marshawn Lynch's was. It would have been cool to just be like, yeah, I retired to a beach.
Yeah. But I will say this though. And again, it might be when you're kind of lying to yourself, facing the truth, even though deep down, you know, it's the truth, mm-hmm. might be a little kick in the teeth, but knowing what she does, why would you expect any other end than a violent end?
Yeah. You know, these violent ends with their violent delights. The other thing that leads me to believe none of that happened is because all of the orderlies were Confederados from season one.
That, yeah, just like Craddock when he came in, because he was the one that actually woke William up.
Yeah, Jonathan Tucker, who I, like, he's, do you remember him on Justified?
No, I.
Oh, you didn't make it to the end of Justified. Okay. So he's a treat in the very last season of Justified. He was in a great show called The Black Donnellys. Great.
Yeah, I remember that show.
That great is overstating. It was a show I really liked. How about that? it was like really the first thing I ever saw Olivia Wilde in. It had Kate Mulgrew. It had the kid that played Smalls in The Sandlot, Tommy Geary. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm always happy when Jonathan Tucker shows up and stuff, because I think he's usually pretty likable. Like, no matter what he's doing, like, you enjoy the way he works as an actor. But yeah, man, I felt like with this season, I actually put at the beginning there, this is season three, just put all the pieces on the board for the final showdown over these last two episodes.
Yeah. Like,
like everyone is in the position, the starting position of, you know, this opening move on a chessboard. But it's a three-way game between, actually it's a four-way game. It's cause it's Dolores versus Serac, Dolores versus Bernard, and then Maeve versus everybody.
Yeah.
Cause I really truly believe like they're like Maeve is helping Serac only as so much as he has her off switch.
Yes. Once she gets that, he's gone. He's basically dead to her.
I don't want them to kill him though. I want him to be the villain for the next two seasons. Like I want him to be the villain for season four, and I want him to be the villain for hopefully season five, and then that's it for Westworld. Like, I don't want more than five seasons of the show.
I don't want less
than five. Yeah, I don't want less than five seasons either. So let's put it that way.
You like the five seasons, Buffy, Supernatural.
Dude, I think if you can tell a really good story in five seasons of television. I think when you get beyond five seasons, you start losing what made your show.
Well, especially if you're trying, if from start to finish everything is tied together.
Yeah.
And that's how this is going to be, like a show like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Buffy was tied together. That was a definitive end to that show.
Yeah.
Supernatural was tied together. That was the definitive end to that show.
Yeah.
And the I get why they brought them back. I understand.
Yeah. And I will say the differences with Buffy and Supernatural is they could throw out those monster of the week, as you could call it. Supernatural's lore is just so ridiculous now. In a good way. Although some things I'm just like, eh. But
you look at like a show like Grimm, for example, right? It went like five or six seasons. It didn't need any more than that.
Yeah,
it really.
And I'm not going to even talk. And let's not even talk about that last season, please.
I mean, it's just an example of another show that went one.
But you know, this is a type of show. It's you're right. It's perfect at five seasons.
Yeah,
it's absolutely perfect.
We're gonna know everything we need to know about this world when it's all said and done.
And even better, because it's not network, you're not going to get the filler. Like, this is a show that you. A filler episodes would kill a show's momentum.
I love the eight episodes. I love that it's only eight episodes. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Less is more. Good storytelling is good storytelling. I hope we don't have to wait 18 months for the next season to come out. I'm so excited for the end game here. You know. We're at the
end game now.
We're at the end of the maze, right? We're the middle of the maze, sorry, and we're ready to see what happens. And you're right, we are at the end game now. Like, you know, Doctor Strange, this was probably one of his 14 million solutions.
Yeah, and I'll just say again, like, this episode from beginning to end, just the poetry of, you know, keeping these through lines. Like I said, it starts off with Maeve realizing, as beautiful as everything is, she, you know, for a split second she's looking at the field and she just feels at home, and then she's like, this isn't real. And then at the very end, William is like, you know, destiny versus choice, if you can't tell, does it really matter?
Yeah
And that is just like perfect bookends, just from a thematic perspective.
Yeah,
and they've done this all season long.
I just kind of want to add one more thing and then we can wrap up. But in the little post making of when the car blew up, they were filming in downtown Los Angeles. They were not allowed to blow up a car on that street. And the way they did that explosion is just,
that was pretty cool.
Virtual effects mastery. And like, even if you don't watch Westworld and you're still listening to this, why? Go check that out. Like even if you don't watch Westworld, go, or if you're not enjoying the season and you're not sticking around for those things, go watch that little 5-minute vignette about this episode. And it's just really cool. Even if you're just at all interested in filmmaking. All right. What are your final thoughts on the episode?
were maggots eating a corpse.
That was a strong line.
Dude, the whole entropy thing and like, you know, yeah. People are the problem and oh God, it was like, man, Ed Harris is so good. He's so, so good. We rewatched The Rock not too long ago. And I just forgot like how powerful he is in that movie.
Yes.
That is a dumb movie. It's a good movie. Don't get me wrong. It is a
I love
good,
that movie.
It is a, yeah. same, but it is a dumb movie. But
it's a Michael
so
Bay
good.
Movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, but that was Michael Bay before, like when Michael Bay was cool, when it was cool to like Michael Bay movies. Now it's not so much.
He was in the infancy of Bayhem.
Bayhem. He was a Bay. Anyway, yeah, no, I've been loving this season. I know you've been enjoying it as well since you got past the second episode, but yeah, I think when it's all said and done, when Westworld has written its final verse, we're gonna look back at the season and be like, this was the pinnacle of where this story went, and this is why we got the story that we got. So I was talking to someone today about Better Call Saul, which I have not started watching yet, which I need to
me
start
neither.
Watching. But I did not like Breaking Bad at first. It took me 3 tries to get through that first season, and I really didn't like the show until Giancarlo Esposito showed up with Gus Fring. But I will say, having watched the first season 3 times when season 6, well, 5A, 5B came around, they wrapped everything up. There was the bow that was put on it was because of what happened in season 1. And and I feel like Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy are doing that kind of storytelling with Westworld, and like we're living in the good old days right now.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as they keep this going, I'm really good.
Yeah, like really, really good.
Yeah. See, like I said, season 2 for me at least, you know, I think if I watch it again, I'll have better appreciation after I watch after this season's over, go back and watch it from the start, season 1, 2, and 3. I think I'll have a better appreciation for season 2.
Yeah.
But I still don't think it comes close to what we're seeing right now.
Right. Right. Yeah. So cool. All right. On that note, I want to thank our new patron, Julian Brown, at the Infamite level for backing the show. You can find Daryl and I on Instagram. He's DJasper07. I'm Brian Tudor. You can find the podcast at Infamous Podcast pretty much anywhere on the web. Yeah. All right, dude. Any last words?
Nope. Go Bengals. Draft day.
Oh, God. Dude, no, I'm totally cutting that out. I'm kidding. I hope the Dolphins trade for Joe Burrow. Actually, what I really hope happens is the Patriots trade for him. The rich get richer. Anyway, all right. On that note, we'll see you guys next week. Later. The Infamous Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati, with new episodes out every Sunday. You can find more information about the show online at infamouspodcast.com or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as at Infamous Podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio, or your favorite podcatching app. If you're enjoying the show, consider giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or check out our Patreon at patreon.com/infamouspodcast for our new tiers and rewards. The Infamous Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Brian Tudor, with music provided by Michael Henry from meetmichaelhenry.com. You can find me on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as at Brian Tudor. So, whenever you're listening to the show, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Later.